Hey guys, welcome back to Squib Load Podcast. I'm Case.
I'm Sean.
And a surprise guest. Who are you?
I am Landon.
Welcome to the podcast, Landon.
Thank you, sir.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling great after I just broke your chair a little bit.
That's fine. Don't worry about that. I can get new chairs.
We picked it up on the pod. Don't worry. For everybody who says that they want to shoot with us and we never shoot with anybody, we spoiled that myth. We're shooting with a freaking viewer right now. We're heroes.
Landon, thank you for shooting with us today.
Man, thank you. It only took me like 30 emails to get you guys approved, so I appreciate it.
We've got a big backlog of fans wanting to shoot with us. Yeah. So.
The photos helped.
I'll tell you what, $50 will bump you up in the queue a lot, so that's nice.
Pen pal us at Squibload, pen pal at pen pal.
Yeah, me and Sean have known Landon forever, so we just kind of ran into him at the range, and we've been shooting with him a whole bunch, and we took him to a match.
Yeah, how was your match, Landon?
The match was awesome. I loved it. So that was so much fun.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. So for the viewers, had you ever shot competitively before?
Never shot outside of a standing range, bay.
So I want to ask you some questions about it. What to you is the biggest difference between shooting at an indoor flat range and then going to shoot USPSA?
As far as mechanically or just overall feel and everything?
Your experience with it. Like, how did you feel shooting it? What were some differences that you noticed?
Well, I felt super comfortable. I mean, I think the biggest worry I had was just like running around with a gun, and I didn't really worry. I didn't care that a bunch of people were sitting around with guns, especially once I found out it's cold range. That made sense.
Yeah.
Like my biggest worry was running around, like, because I've only done standing. But I mean, after the first one, where you're moving around and you realize, okay, it's not as bad as you would think. Like,
yeah,
I felt totally safe. Everyone there was so chill. Like, it was like drama free, house free. Maybe because it was all guys. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
On our first one, did we move? Was that the one where we went left right?
First one was the swivel.
Oh, so the first one was just a standing still one, which is a perfect one to be your first one.
Yeah. Similar to like an El Presidente drill, which we did shoot. We did shoot an El Presidente drill on this time, but there's very minimal movement today at this match, which I think was good for like a first time event, because there was a little bit, like, you got like a taste of what it's like to like move and run and shoot, but it wasn't, you weren't getting lost in a stage, you weren't having to move like behind cover and stuff like that. So I think it was a really good intro to comp shooting.
We all got to do new stuff. We all got to spin for the first time.
That was fun. The retreats are where I think it'd be like kind of tricky. Like, I feel like that's where you'd fall or something.
Have we seen someone fall yet?
I've seen people trip, but not completely like eat shit. Yeah. Like, there's been people who stumbled and kind of recovered.
Yeah.
But I've never seen someone completely fall and drop their gun.
Every match we've been to so far, we've definitely seen somebody who should be DQ'd who didn't.
Yeah.
It even happened this one
today.
Very end.
Well, we had two guys too that DQ'd on the first day. Not in our squad.
And that was completely, the two guys showed up with a bump.
Totally geared up. Yeah. Like the biggest gearheads you could find.
Yeah. They got DQ'd.
Yeah.
Don't reload with your finger on the trigger.
That's a great lesson to learn. We did have one guy we noticed who didn't get DQ'd, but I argue that he should have been, who was clearing a malfunction, but he still had his finger in the trigger guard, and he was doing a tap rack bang. He went to tap the bottom of his gun, and the gun went off.
Yeah.
So.
Are 1911s pretty strong? It was a 1911. Are they pretty thick triggers, like pretty hard to pull?
No, they're very light triggers. Okay, they're single action triggers with light pulls. So,
I'm obviously new, but I would understand giving him a pass if he just had his finger in the trigger guard while reloading, which you're not supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
But for a round to go off and not DQ him is kind of crazy. I think he just had the old head, like, regular status.
He got lucky and no one called it out.
It also helps that he was facing completely downrange, and the shot went into the berm. So it wasn't like it was, nobody got hurt, but it was more the thought of like, well, you didn't mean to fire and you did.
And
to me, that should be a DQ.
I will definitely explain that the other two guys who got DQ'd like the first stage immediately, it was the same exact thing as what that guy did, except they saw it happen.
Yeah.
They were reloading. He was clearing a malfunction. Same thing, basically.
Yeah.
But they kept their finger on and it fired while they were reloading. It fired while he was clearing a malfunction.
Well, you know what made his DQ worse is he was pasting three targets before the guy came over to read them. If he hadn't been doing that, I wouldn't have really...
Free pass.
Yeah. I would have given him a little leeway.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, Landon, so this is your first competitive match. The gear you brought to the range, do you think you brought good gear, or was it like middle of the road? Like, what gear did you bring?
No, I brought horrible gear. I mean, it worked fine. I didn't have any like mechanical issues because of my gear, but I was telling Case, I wasn't able to get like a holster I would have liked to have, like a I don't know if I necessarily need to have my light on, but that gun at my at home, my CZP-10F, I leave a light on it. So I'd like to shoot with the light on, so I'm used to that.
Yeah.
But it's going to take too long to get a holster with it. So I got the quickest thing I could in order to, you know, be able to do the match today. So I just got a holster off Amazon and a mag holster off. Mag holster, I mean,
yeah,
being new, I don't think you need anything crazy
there. Yeah.
Pocket the holster work. I had... I didn't have any issues with it, except whenever I would draw, it would cant forward afterwards. So I had to put it back and remember to cant middle.
Yeah.
I'd say the only thing I would have liked to have had is something that stuck out a little bit further. So I'm not like drawing up against my, not necessarily, like it wasn't scraping my body while pulling up, but something out a little bit further so I can, you know, be ready soon.
Did you have any malfunctions the whole day?
No, I didn't have any issues.
You didn't have any failures to feed or anything?
No.
That's so pretty good.
As the core part of your gear, your handgun was a CZ
P10? P10F,
yeah. P10F, full yeah. size. And no malfunctions, and it just chewed through blazer ammo. So that's a pretty good review.
It was actually, I was shooting Federal today, which I've never bought Federal before, but I shot all Federal today, no issues.
Okay.
Yeah, I've had the CZ for a little over a month now. I've definitely put at least 500-600 rounds through it. I haven't had any issues at all.
Okay. Do you think that the gear that you brought affected your performance? Like, if you had like super expensive gear that you had like personally tested and tried out, like, do you think that would have made you shoot better, place higher?
No, I think if I had just had more practice time with the gear I did have, because I've never really practiced any drawing from holster I've done has been from appendix, because I carry appendix.
Right.
And so that's the drawing practice I have. So if I'd had more time to practice drawing from the hip, I would have liked it, but I don't think the gear I had impeded my, no. I think the biggest thing that impeded me was not having drawing practice and also being the first match. So like, I'll shoot quickly at the range, but the quick double taps, like as quick as I thought I was at the range, it's not quick enough out at a match. So
yeah,
that was something that I figured out pretty quick.
The best thing to learn whenever you're like at a match versus at the flat range is you think your double taps are really good at the flat range. And then you shoot your first target at the match, and you shoot an A, and then the next one's a D. And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What happened?
I was really happy with my shot placements, though. I mean, I think I had two D zones, so I was really happy with that. I know my time wasn't up there, but because I would watch the video, too. I'm like, man, that one felt so quick. And I watched it, bang, bang, bang. It's pretty slow. But I was really happy with the where I placed and everything. And then, like I was telling you guys in the car, the confidence I got from doing like as well as I did for my first time, but then also the humbling of knowing, you know, how much I actually have to work on.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have known that I needed that unless I had done a match, right?
Yeah.
There's only so much you'll pick up on doing the same thing over and over at the indoor range.
Right.
Until you go to the real thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you film any of the really good shooters we were with?
I filmed a couple guys.
I would recommend that if you go and you got a guy who you watch one time, he shoots really good. Next time he's up, film him.
Yeah.
And then, or ask him. You should always ask if you can film him. But after you do, make sure you like watch it back and be like, damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
Landon, you said something I wanted to touch on. You said that going to this match really helped you realize what you needed to work on and kind of what the future can look like in terms of your progression as a shooter, right?
Yeah.
I want to point out that when I first saw you shoot on indoor range, I really noticed, I'm like, your slow fire and your stature as a shooter at an indoor range was really good. I was like, this is a guy who knows the fundamentals. You were very accurate with slow fire with your handguns and stuff. And I was like, this is a really good start. But I knew that as soon as we got you out of your comfort zone, you'd be like, oh, that's what's missing. That's what needs to be done further, right? And so I just want to say kudos, because that was a really good first match. Like, I think you did really good.
I think you did better than both of us.
I think I was a little cocky going into my first match. I mean, we made an entire episode about it a long time ago, but you can go back and listen to Case and I's first match, and I don't think we did as good as you. I don't think we quite had the foundation of, like, being that good handgun shooters before we went.
I was pretty hyped up that Sean was going to, like, be – like top 10, I was going to be like, man, this shit's easy. And then we were like humbled very quickly.
Yeah. Which, I mean, now I place decently.
Yeah, you play pretty good.
I mean, not like amazing. I'm not going to win any awards, but it's like I'm clearly, I've improved over the last 6 months to a year of doing this, which is why, Landon, I know you enjoyed it. I hope you come back and shoot when you can at these events, because it does make you way better.
Yeah. And I barely beat Landon, even though I've gone to four. I barely beat him.
I would love to do it again, especially now that I know what I can practice just at home. I'm going to get way into, I mean, just the dry firing alone, I'm going to get way more into. And then the drawing I have to get. Finding that dot was my biggest issue for, once I got started, it was fine, but that was what would hold me up on the start, was like getting it and then finding the dot, which, I don't know, I guess, what would you recommend somebody, I guess you the recommendation is probably to shoot what you're used to shooting. So if you're used to irons, shoot irons. If you're used to dots, shoot dots.
Yeah.
I've only had a dot, the CZ that I got came with a dot on it. That's my first dot ever. So I've only been shooting a dot for like a month. So I feel like maybe I would have even done better with irons, but what do you guys think?
I feel like me and Sean are pretty like biased on this, but we say like skip the irons, go straight to dot. If you can't afford it.
We've talked about this in the past, but I mean, I think shooting with a dot is easy mode. Like, there is like a bit of a learning curve to understanding like where that dot is and finding it, but I don't think it's any harder than learning how iron sights actually work. Because there are a lot of people who will think they are good with iron sights, but they are actually not understanding the fundamentals of how to aim and properly like zero in their irons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they think, oh, I'll just line up the three dots, right? And it's like that works at a certain range. But as soon as you close the distance or you push further than what those irons are permanently zeroed at, you have to understand to a greater level what the irons are actually doing. And with a dot, it makes that stuff so much easier because you're the one zeroing it, right?
You can just find that dot. You find it so fast.
Once you get good with your dot and you know where to put it and it naturally comes up to your vision, it will be so much easier than irons ever will be.
I guess I'm not sure what you mean by zeroing your irons. Cause, I mean, like you said, they're fixed. So what do you mean by...
So for a pistol sights to be zeroed, they're permanently... Some sights are adjustable like irons, but they're zeroed at two distances at any given time, right? But if you raise the muzzle of your gun or lower it, you can line up the iron sights differently, and then they'll be zeroed at a different range. So I know, for example, like I have a Glock 22 Gen 4, and I know that if I raise the sights where the rear sights are perfectly below the front sight, that is sighted in for 80 yards.
Oh, okay.
And simultaneously, I think the close range on that is like about 25.
Yeah.
But I know that the bullet will hit squarely where I'm aiming if I line my irons up just like that, right?
Okay. I wasn't aware of that. I've always shot and went over it with you at the range yesterday. I'd never shoot like anything really beyond 30 feet. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know how far these matches can get, but obviously that's something I want to work on. With the dot, I don't need to make the adjustments, I guess, as much as you would with the irons at distance. But I mean, what's the furthest that it gets in the pistols?
The farthest we've shot at a match was about 40 yards.
Yeah.
Okay. Which 120 feet, most indoor ranges don't go that far. The indoor range that we frequent, the three of us, doesn't go that far. It goes to 75, which I think is pretty normal, so 25 yards. I really do think, though, that's more a limitation of the infrastructure of the range. You should be, as a pistol shooter, comfortable shooting at 50 yards with a handgun.
Yeah.
To me, that's normal.
Yeah. And whenever we shot that 40-yard shot, which was the first time we've ever seen it on a USPSA, it was like bay 6. It was like the whole bay. Like, you were shooting on this side to the other side.
Oh, wow.
Whenever that happened, how did everybody react? What was their first ideal whenever they saw the shot that far?
I'm going to shoot more than twice.
Yeah, they shot. Like, everybody would finish the whole thing, and then that would be their last shot, and they would just throw, like, whatever they got left at it.
Four or five, yeah.
Yeah, because it counts the best two. Right. So they're like, if I throw six at it, maybe I'll get two alphas.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'll just miss six, you know? So that's kind of what they were doing. And we did it, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think I shot it three or four times. That was a while ago, but I think I shot mostly Alpha, and I had like one Charlie or something. But I'm decent at shooting at those kind of ranges with a handgun.
And that's a good talk on like people who say like if you're in a self-defense situation, they're really far. Like, can you rely on your handgun? And it's like, well, if you can't rely on your handgun, the more rounds you have, the better, because you can just throw six at them over there. Maybe you'll hit them. Maybe you won't, you know?
I guess I've always been to the mind that, like, the common self-defense happening is within, what, that 20 to 30-foot range.
Yeah.
So I would think at a distance of 75 feet or further, you know, unless I'm the only guy with a gun around, I guess I don't see that situation playing out where I would want to try to shoot from that far, just given that more than likely if there's something like that happening, there's going to be a sea of people or, you know, because I can't – in your home, nobody's going to be that far away.
Yeah.
Most public places you go to, you know, if it's – you know, they go for, you know, enclosed rooms, so you're not going to have anything super far. But practicing at a distance, I mean, we saw – there was that one shooting in Texas years ago at this church, and I don't know. You guys probably saw the video. The guy pulled a shotgun out, blasted one guy. But then a older man, older guy, like Ancient of Days, he was like way far away, and he boom, one shot. So that, I mean, seeing that you never know when it's going to happen. So practicing that distance is definitely something I want to.
What was the caliber of that? That was such a good shot.
It was 357 SIG. That shot was
and over the heads of the. I mean, it's a miracle nobody was standing up to run away, and like he was. It happened just so fast. If it had happened any slower, somebody probably would have gotten hurt.
He was a church security.
Yeah, so that guy is a great example. I'm glad you brought that up. But that's a great example of when self-defense shootings go beyond that 20 to 30 feet range and might have to prepare for them anyway. Because I agree, the FBI statistic is that most self-defense shootings happen within 21 feet, which is 7 yards.
Yeah.
And that's what I – if I take a new gun to the range, I'll sight it – I'll put my target at 21 feet, right? I'm sorry. That's yeah,
21 yards, right?
No, 21 feet.
Oh, 21 feet. Okay.
Yeah, 7 yards. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So, by that logic, that's like the average, which means that there's a lot of shootings that are closer than that, and there's a lot of shootings that are past that.
Yeah,
that's just the middle.
Median.
Yeah,
yeah, the average.
And that example you brought up is one where that was
like my cock.
Quite a bit further. What?
Average, like my cock.
Exactly. Yeah, like 4.5. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. That was a 357 SIG, and that was probably – I'm glad you used the word miracle. That was probably the perfect caliber at the right range for that shooting, because if it was like a 9mm, I would worry about the accuracy at that distance, and then I would also worry about over-penetration.
Yeah.
And that was a really good round where it hit the guy, and it had lethal effect, but it didn't go through him and hurt anybody else. Mm-hmm. So best result there. I mean, other than that one guy that got killed, which
it's
sucks. But
miracle on the Hudson, except instead he just blew some guy's brains out.
Literally, like, decapitated somebody with a big
hand. He still got one guy, the shotgun guy.
Yeah,
he
unfortunately.
He stood up and got one guy who was drawing as the shotgun was pointed at him.
Yeah, which sucks.
Wait, the guy who he shot was drawing?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
He
also a security guy?
Yeah. Well, it was a church in Texas, so, I mean, half the congregation's probably security, right?
Yeah. Another Squiblo tip is definitely don't do a shooting in Texas.
That's a great piece of advice.
Go to like Cali.
I'm gonna let Case have that segment. Where to commit shootings?
New York, California, Virginia.
I thought New York loosened up on their
New York City. There you go.
Didn't they loosen up on their gun restrictions? Like
they just
so
killed
slightly.
A CEO.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the whole state conspired against that one.
Yeah,
on that one,
they helped them.
Well, there's a difference between New York State and New York City, because I know in New York City it's damn near impossible to get a firearm.
Right. Okay, so that's something of the state.
And state, it's like basically besides New York City, it's all like country mostly.
There's a lot of rural areas. Like if you go to like Albany and Buffalo, those are actually fairly rural in comparison, right?
I went home with a Marine I knew, and he lived in New York, and I was like, heck yeah. And we went home with him. I was like, we're in the middle of fucking nowhere. I was like, you own a cow farm? And he was like, yeah. I was
Nobody
like,
posts pictures of the New York countryside. I've never seen
it. It's really beautiful. It's super cool.
Are they? That's not mountainous. What is that?
It is mountainy.
Is it really?
Of, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I know that Buffalo, New York is like so close to the Canadian border that they have more in common with like they have Canadian accents basically.
Sure, yeah.
And they're so far from the city. Like I think Quebec is closer. I could be getting my geography wrong, but I know there's some Canadian city that is really close to them and it's closer than New York City.
Yeah.
So like that's where they would go to like go drink and stuff, you know, and then come back to their
and home then they made the best chicken wing ever.
Buffalo.
No, hold on. Ranch or blue cheese with your
wings? It has to be blue cheese with buffalo wings. That's what they say.
As a certified.
I'm asking what you use, though.
Oh, blue cheese.
Yeah.
But it depends on, like, which wing you get. If, like, okay, so say you're going to get, like, a Thai spice at Buffalo Wild Wings or something. You're getting ranch, baby. Ranch.
Not me. I'm putting blue cheese on every wing.
Really?
Yeah. Personally.
As a certified grade A jumbo fat fuck, I put both.
I put both, yeah.
I mix them together.
But
you mix blue cheese and ranch?
Yeah, I know.
Buffalo wings definitely taste so much better with blue cheese, though.
Yeah.
And that's what, like, the buffalo wing was invented to be eaten with the blue cheese is, like, the joke. But it is real.
So, universally, we talked about this a bit, but universally, what is the best hot sauce? Because I personally am going to throw in my money for Frank's Red Hot.
Really?
Universally, it's the most, like, you can put it on just about anything.
That's what they say. We got a lot of Frank Red Hotters in this fucking building right now.
I think I'm between Frank's. Frank's is definitely has more universality, but I like the taste of sriracha a little bit more. It has, like, the, I don't know if it's a slight, not sweet to where you think you're eating something with sugar in it, but it just has a different tang to it. I love it on pizza. I mean, I'll put it in like a, I don't know, like what, like a broccoli cheese casserole or some soups or something.
I like my hot sauce like I like my women. Cholula. And in the fridge.
I don't like any of the Mexican hot sauces at all.
What?
Tapatio, Cholula.
Are you a Tabasco guy, though?
No, not really. Tabasco is, like, too...
Vinegar?
Too vinegary. I do every now and then. You know one... one
Tabasco freaks?
One Mexican hot sauce I do like... It's not hot really at all.
Valentino.
I knew
it was going to be Valentino.
Dude, I love Valentino.
Literally the grossest thing I've ever had.
I don't know what it is about it. We just had, our family had a huge jar of it. Like, it looked like a 40 in there.
You try your favorite hot sauce and you think it's so good. And then you try the green kind and you go, damn, that's even better. Verde.
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 Verde means green.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Which sauce do you get at Taco Bell? Which hot sauce?
Oh, I couldn't tell you the last time I ate at Taco Bell.
Me neither.
But I would say Diablo, hot. Man. And then, like, people get Diablo. Like, just the fact that it comes in a black package, I'm like, that's going to taste like shit.
Looks cooler, though.
Yeah. I just, if you, also, colors definitely play into it. Yeah. And if you put your hot sauce in a black bottle or something like that, yeah, I'm going to think it's going to taste bad and not hot.
I imagine sawdust and butthole coming out of a black hot sauce bottle.
Like, I just think soy sauce. And then, like... Feels. By the way, everybody's watched Hot Ones online, right?
Yeah.
All those Hot One sauces are so good.
Are they really?
Yeah, all the Hot Ones the Hot One guys made wherever they redid the sauces, all of them are amazing.
Case, I think you're a Hot One.
I think so, too.
They have a Hot Ones Pringles
in traffic.
Now.
They have a Pringles Hot One?
Pringles Hot Ones. So they take the sauce and they, you know, will do whatever they do to make it a dust and put it on the Pringles.
Yeah, they bukkake it all over.
Dude, someone kick your butt, bro.
Do they really?
Yes, they get hot.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever do the one chip?
Yeah, challenge? Definitely got one chip before.
I've never done one chip.
I did a corner of a one chip while playing doubles ping pong in college.
Wish I did that.
Yeah, I threw up.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
It's so nasty.
I recently had the hottest heat level at a Thai restaurant that's local, and that fucked me up.
I've done the ghost pepper, and I ate a Carolina Reaper. And it probably sat inside me for about a minute, and I threw it up that quick. That's how hot it is.
Yeah.
So I didn't even have, like, the... Everybody says, like, one of the big things about hot sauce is whenever you poop it out later.
Yeah.
Didn't have that with the Carolina Reaper. Had it with the ghost pepper. Ghost pepper kicked my ass, and then the Carolina Reaper, people who eat that actually do have a problem. It's very not good.
Yeah.
It's just the Vietnamese and, like,
Yeah.
You have to be some level of Asian to do the Reaper stuff on a regular basis, more than once a year.
If you could go back in time and make someone eat a Carolina Reaper, who would it be?
Oh, I'd probably make OJ eat one while getting chased.
Oh, yeah, on the chase.
Yeah, on the chase.
I don't even think he was driving, was he?
I'll give you a reason to cry.
He's in the back, right?
He was in the back. I think a fellow football player was driving, but he was in the back, and he's like, I've got a gun. I'm going to kill myself.
If I had to...
I didn't know this detail. I thought OJ was driving the whole
time. No, he had his buddy driving, and OJ was in the back crying.
Yeah, he got out and was like ushered away. I would probably give a Carolina Reaper to Kyle Rittenhouse on the night of stop him.
A spicy shooting.
Yeah. That building would have burned down. We would have stopped him. Burned down that freaking auto place.
You can't play this angle because we've already done an episode on Kyle.
Well, no, I'm just saying I would give it to him.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. I'd probably do it to John Wilkes Booth.
I was going to say that. I was like, wait, I could stop a president shooting?
Yeah.
I would give it to whoever shot JFK. What's his name?
Lee Harvey Oswald.
I'd give it to him, but JFK would still get shot. Because we all know.
Allegedly.
I'd give it to John, or I'd give it to Lee Harvey Oswald. And if JFK was still dead to this day, we'd all know. I would solve that one.
No way you could shoot a bolt-action rifle 3 times in 2 seconds when your mouth's on fire.
When you're on the hot ones, final dab.
So, Landon, what got you into guns? Like, was there, like, a gun you thought was cool, or, like, did you play games?
What
or,
was
like,
her what? Name?
I don't know what got me into guns. In my immediate family, first gun owner, my uncle had guns. Never took me out. I'd been shooting once with a friend. I don't know what got me into them, but like something just a switch flipped in my head. It was in 2020 before COVID. It was, I want to say, like a month or two before. I was like, I'm done gaming now. And so I sold my gaming PC and bought a Smith & Wesson M&P Shield. And I still don't.
Based.
I wish I could remember what got me into them, but it just must have been an underlying interest just from games and movies, right?
Sure.
Like anybody else. And then just like the natural male inclination towards a pistol.
Sure.
So yeah, I sold that and, got my M&P, and then I don't know what. A couple months later, I got the LCP too, which Case shot recently.
That was definitely a topic. So me and Landon both own Bodyguard 2.0s, best 380 on the market. And he said that he used to own the Ruger LCP2.
Yeah.
So he bought a bodyguard. And I was like, I got to try it. Because everybody says it competes. It does not compete. It is trash and it is left in the dust. It's about the same price.
I have a feeling
it's like
$100 more. I have a feeling that everyone that likes it a lot, just from YouTube comments and everything, I've never had any. It's just, it's like you're, every 2 months go to the indoor range, guys. Like, I don't think it's any month serious.
It's bad.
It's phenomenal for carry because it's small, but just for, a little bit more, you get the Bodyguard 2.0, which is double stacked. Yeah. Feels way better in the hand. You don't have an awkward pinky hanging off without an extended mag. Like,
but it is new, so there was no market before that. So it probably might have been one of the best before the Bodyguard.
Sure.
Now the Bodyguard's there, I don't want to see any 380s ever bad again.
Yeah.
And if they are bad, then I'll just buy the Bodyguard.
I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast before, but the LCP is just... At one point, it was an LCP or a revolver.
Yeah.
If you wanted to shoot a really, really, really small gun that shot a small caliber like 380 or 32 ACP, your option was a revolver or the Ruger LCP.
Yeah.
And now in a modern world, the Bodyguard is out. I know there's other competitors coming out. And the 380 is kind of making a resurgence as like this viable modern round. And I'm really happy to see that. But I still think that I would choose a revolver over the LCP any day of the week.
We're in... Fucking George Bush's America, no round left behind.
Yeah, I mean,
we're saving the 380.
The LCP makes me think of like Katrina, like an overweight mom in Katrina, and she's like, "Well, I gotta have something in my purse."
This is the worst thing I'll say about the LCP, so everybody knows. The High Point shot better.
The High Point shot better than the LCP.
Yeah, it shot better. High Point are really bad.
You did only shoot one shot.
I'm telling you, that is the worst trigger I've ever shot. We talked about the curve driving here.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe if I've shot a curve, that would be like the one that competes. The Taurus curve.
You might
curve.
Have a fan that'll send you one.
Dude, if you got a curve and you got a good deal, message us. We will shoot it.
You know what I'm waiting on? So I got into guns 2020. You know, a couple months later, COVID happens. I'd been to, been to our range before.
You're good.
Clap.
Been there before. And so you know how it is usually when you go in there. The only crowd you're going to get is maybe like, six people in front of you that are waiting to get into the bay. When COVID happened, the lockdowns are going on. Dude, I went in there one day. The whole place is full. And, I mean, it's like the people you would not usually see. So you got, like, your pink-haired guys in there. You got your neckbeards. From every socioeconomic classes in there buying guns. So I just know there's a lot of guns sitting out there that these people have not used since. And I want them to let them go for a good deal. I'm just waiting on them to drop.
The market is, like, I mean, I'm a optic Facebook marketplace buyer.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, you do not have to pay full price for those optics.
No,
they're just out there.
Yeah. You don't get the warranty, so take your chance.
If you get a good dot, though, you don't really need the warranty, I think.
Yeah.
Like, for example, like my Aimpoint Acro.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll ever need the warranty on
it. There's a freak accident.
There could be a freak accident, like if I'm in a car crash or whatever and it breaks my optic, but like those dots are so durable. Yeah. Like you could light them on fire and they just still work. So
I love the and I don't know what it is about my dot, but it looks much better outside. Inside, for whatever reason, it feels like there's a little bit of bloom on it, so it's not just a perfect dot. But outside, it was just a dot.
That's all
it
was.
So it's like what the Acro is inside is what my dot became outside.
Right.
Which I really like.
That's a question I had. Do you think a green dot made an effect compared to a red dot?
Could
you see it?
I don't personally think so. I saw my dot, but again, it's my first dot, so I've only shot on a red, like when I've shot y'all's Glocks recently, and then one time before that, I shot my buddy. So I don't know how a red would have made a difference.
I know the only thing that they can say about green that is probably true is like most places like that shooting would happen could be outside and grassy, and green blends in with grass and stuff, but I think it'll still stick out.
Yeah.
It'll definitely stick out.
I agree. I mean, what really matters to me is how bright is your dot and how sunny is it outside. Because today was a bright, sunny day, and I had my dot up to full power, and I still wish it could have been brighter.
That's why I wore the sunglasses, which you're not supposed to do. We talked about it, and I did it, and it worked out great.
Yep. My Acro was on full blast. I wish it was a little bit brighter. I had some problems seeing it because it was so bright out, and we were shooting steel, and like sun was, I wouldn't say reflecting off the steel, but it was like, the steel was not helping the problem with too much light and not enough dot, right?
Yeah.
So,
did you see anybody who was like shooting today that shot better than you that you think if you had that gun you would have shot better or something?
No, honestly, I didn't pay as close of attention as maybe I should have to what guns people were shooting.
Yeah,
I would take a look, but it's like, you know, I think it's like with being self-defense trained, you know, whatever you're used to shooting is what you're going to do well with. I mean, you probably could have put a guy out there with, I don't know,
what, high point.
The M&P,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But if they put 3,000 rounds through it, they know how to handle that gun.
Yeah. No, yeah, well said. I mean, that's one of the reasons I asked you about your gear is because I think that simply showing up to this match, even if you have, like, cheap, crappy gear, which, for the record, your gear isn't that bad.
Yeah.
It's just, like...
It's pretty crappy.
Well, it's like you got in a hurry, yeah. Like, from, like, what, Amazon or whatever?
Yeah, let's say, like, I got in with everything, like, let's say $60 total for the holster and then the mag holster. So if somebody's worried about the cost to get in, like, having the best... I was able to do it with a cheap $60 or Paz holster off of Amazon.
Yeah. So, like, don't worry about, like, oh, I can't compete because I don't have the right gear. Like, they'll let you get in, and it's a good experience.
They'll let you use your pockets.
I was going to say, like, if you don't have a magazine pouch or a mag holster, like, just put your mags in your pocket and show up and shoot, and you'll learn something and you'll get better.
Don't you load with your pocket mag the first one?
Yeah. Because for most of these stages, you don't need more than two magazines. So I'll have a mag in my pocket and then two mags on my belt.
Yeah.
And I'll take one out of my pocket, load my gun to make ready, right?
Yeah.
And then I've got two mags on my belt for the rest of the match.
We saw a good Chad moment where me and Sean both shoot Glock, so we have 17 rounds. And then you shoot your CZ, so you have 19. And we had a shoot that was 24. We saw a good Chad moment where somebody had a gun that had 24 rounds.
Yeah, that was
and
lit.
He didn't have to reload, so he was way faster. And I was like, what, Chad?
Yeah, he probably got 3 seconds better than everyone else because he didn't have to reload.
Yeah, just big old mag. Yeah,
he was just running around, holing 24 bullets in his gun.
I was thrown off by all the beveled, what's the bottom?
Magwell.
Beveled magwells. And yeah. I've never really seen that, you know, indoor, obviously. But, like, I guess there are guns out there that people buy specifically for competition. Not necessarily something you know. Which I personally, I don't know if I would get something just for competition. I'd like to, you know, get as much practice as I can in the event that I need my firearm. So I don't know that I would have a gun that's strictly for competition.
I don't think I'd ever care enough about competition to buy a competition gun.
No.
Well, they're also very cost prohibitive, generally speaking. Like, people get 2011s, and those are $2,500, and that's without an optic and without any extras. So between spare mags and an optic, you're talking $3,500 for just that gun. It's a little much.
And then... Another part of it is, like, the 2011s aren't even the race guns.
No, there are, like, full-on race guns, and I wish I could remember the name of them. But,
open guns.
Well, yes, but there's, like, a specific model that everyone uses that has, like, a charging handle, and it's made completely of chrome, and it's, like, just over $5,000.
Yeah, so kind of like how a rifle would have a charging handle to rack. These pistols have it. It's crazy. It's kind of boring whenever you see it. But they're fast. And then, like, there's nothing worse than seeing a guy who has one of those.
And he shoots like shit.
And you're like, oh, my God. Imagine if I had that.
Well, it's just like what we were talking about. It's like you came up with, in a hurry, not great gear, and you shot pretty well. I mean, I think you shot pretty well. And it's like your gear is very rarely the limiting factor in these competitions. Like, if you yourself are a competent shooter, if you're so good that your gear is holding you back, then good for you.
Yeah.
But I don't think that most people are there.
And, I mean, we know some of the best shooters, if you ever look them up on, like, line and stuff, they're shooting like M&P shields.
I
guess I'd also say you don't need to have a, just from my first day, I don't think you need to have a competition gun where you're like trying to shave off, you know, this ever slightest bit of recoil that you can. Like, if you're, again, just goes back to the gun you practice on, right?
Yeah,
so you don't need to get some $2,500 pistol that's going to shave off just a little bit.
I saw it a couple times while you were shooting, wherever you're all ready, you're like locked in, you got everything, you know what your plan is. You say, I'm ready. The beep went off, and you went, what am I doing? And then you were like, for like 1 second, you were like, what am I doing? And then you lock in, and you do it. But like, no matter how ready you are, every so often, you'll just get the one where you're like, huh?
Yeah.
And it just costs you like 2 seconds alone, just right there.
Yeah.
There are definitely two things in this world that don't lie. First one is hips, and the second one is shot timers.
Yeah.
They don't lie.
Shot timer don't lie.
It will humble you and be very honest. And you're like, damn, I'm pretty good at shooting. That shot timer be like, thank again, motherfucker, because you suck.
Like the guy before, you got 8 seconds, you go up, you get like 32 seconds. You're like, what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't see anybody that took real long except our one fellow who kept having issues with his gun, Academy guy.
He had ammo problems, which we had that one time, but Sean handled it pretty quick because he was just tap, rack, banging.
Yeah.
And I could definitely tell you that guy has never trained to tap, rack, bang.
Which is very concerning. As considering his history,
he's gonna be a guy.
But there was one guy who I don't want to bully him too much because I'm glad that he was here practicing and it was his first match. But, like, Landon kind of blew this guy out of the water. And this guy had been in the Army for a very long time and also, like, was...
about to be a cop.
About to be a cop. Yeah. So, little concerning there. But, hey, I'm glad that he's practicing and learning. So
he did have, like, his first one where it messed up. He had the worst tap rack bang I've ever seen. And then by the end, since he kept getting them, he improved.
What was he? Was he tapping it on his head?
No, he, like... he was, like, trying to rack the slide, and it just kept getting stuck because the round's stuck in there. Yeah. So you have to pull the mag out.
Yeah.
And so he didn't know that.
Which is, he was inducing more and more. Like, it started with, like, a failure to eject, and then he short-stroked the slide, which caused a double feed. Mm. So then the solution is take the mag out, run the action. Yeah. If you have to, clear the malfunction with your fingers.
Yeah.
Reinsert mag, run the action. And he, like... his brain stopped working in the middle of that process, and it just was hard to watch.
Yeah, if you have a double feed... and you have your magazine in, bullets don't go anywhere. You pull the magazine out, now you got a fun slide for all your bullets to fall on the ground.
Yeah, and I will say, I've cleared two different kinds of three different kinds of malfunctions at the range. I've had failure to eject, light primer strike, and then I've had one double feed.
Yeah.
And your brain does kind of stop working when you're on the clock trying to clear malfunctions, but the more you practice it, the better you'll be when it's time to actually do it for real. So
the rarest one is the funnest one, which is the stovepipe.
That's a failure to eject.
Yeah.
And the rarest one, I would argue, is
squibby.
Squib load.
If you, by the way, at USPSA, if you get a squib load, you get you don't get a reshoot.
Really?
Yeah, it counts as you failed to do that stage, and they don't DQ you, but you have to, you like just get all the misses for that stage.
Really?
So say you were to load, shoot like one target, then you get a squib load on that first target, and you recognize it, and you say, "Hey, I got a squib load," and you stop it. Every target's a miss.
Yeah, I feel like like in the heat of the moment, it might be easy to miss a squib and just keep going.
We've had one called out, and it wasn't a squib, so we got to reshoot.
I find that surprising that you get the whole bait, you know, the whole round taken away just for that, because that's not in your control. What were the guys reshooting for today?
The first guy, both of them are actually starting the wrong way. So if one of them was the guy you were supposed to spin around to start, he didn't spin around. And then the other one was you were supposed to start outside the stage and he didn't. And I said it right before the guy was shooting, like, "Hey, he's not outside the stage." And they didn't stop it and they let him shoot it. And then they were like, "Oh, by the way, you got to reshoot." And I was I said that.
I had a feeling they knew, like they had to have known, because they just did 10 guys before him.
And they're usually not like that. I think it was because it was, a qualifier?
Yeah, it's a qualifier, and there was tons of people out there, so I think they were...
not paying attention.
Yeah.
Just keep it moving.
But I yelled at the RO, and I was like, "You got to start outside." And then they ignored me, and they let him shoot the whole thing, and they're like, "You got to reshoot, by the way, because you didn't start outside." And I was like, first off, this made no difference, and second off, he's a first-time shooter. Third off, I also said something, so... Yeah,
they heard you and just turned their ear pro all the way down.
Yeah, they just had to, waste my time today. Yeah.
Landon, did you have any topics you wanted to... bring up with us? Any topics you wanted to talk about for the podcast?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Well, have you guys seen the Minecraft movie videos on Instagram?
About which one? Because I've seen all of them.
The chicken, people throwing the popcorn at
yeah.
the chicken.
I'm trying to go do it.
You
I
did?
Don't give a fuck.
I think it's hilarious. What I don't like, because it's already disrespectful, right? But I think it's so funny and I would do it. But what I don't like is whenever they shut the theater down and then the kids are like super disrespectful to the people that are like, it's one thing to already be disrespectful to the facilities, but then to like start bad mouthing the workers, you got to give them a little bit of a break.
We may have someone in this room on this podcast now who's tried to get three different Minecraft meals to get the toy.
Oh yeah.
I'm not going to name names. It's Case, but.
Well, it's probably your, hungry editor. He looks kind of famished.
Yeah. Dude, I freaking need.
Every time he misses a week, we don't feed him dinner is the problem.
Yeah, I went to the bathroom and I heard this guy like tapping on the wall. And yeah. I put my ear up to him. He goes, "Can you DoorDash me a meal?"
Yeah.
I just ignored him.
Deep down, listen to him.
Yeah, I just ignored
him. He doesn't even edit these shits good, so fuck him.
The problem is that we can tell if he's eating when he's not supposed to, and we'll hit him more. So.
Yeah.
Well, if he stopped using Windows Movie Maker, like it's not 2010 anymore.
I keep telling him to stop doing that, but everyone, oh, I missed another week. Oh, the audio's messed up. Dude, shut up. Get back in your cage.
Would you ever go see the Minecraft movie, Sean? We all know the answer to this. Let's see.
I first of all, didn't know they made a Minecraft movie.
What?
He's so dark.
Oh, so you don't even know the videos I'm talking about.
No, I know.
You're so dark-pilled, dude.
What's dark-pilled?
It's whenever you're just so in the dark, you're taking them pills to stay there.
What? a quick run through. I'm not gonna go pay money to see it because I hate Jack Black. I'm tired of Jack Black being in stuff.
All right.
I just wish he would just retire already.
School of Cock.
He sings in the movie, which sucks because I also don't like when he sings.
All right.
But anyways, people have been taking. So the movie's really bad. It's got these cheesy bits that have been in trailers. People have been memeing these certain scenes. And so at this one particular scene, a guy's in the ring, chicken drops down, and then a zombie drops down on him, yells chicken jockey, right? You've played Minecraft.
No.
You haven't played Minecraft?
No.
He is dark.
This guy's based.
Dark pill. So anyways, at that scene, people jump up and start throwing popcorn all over the theater, chucking drinks at the screen.
Okay.
One guy brought in a live chicken, and they had a live chicken.
Jesus, yeah.
So anyway, that's what's been going on there.
Yeah. The zombie sits on the chicken's back, so people are like sitting on each other's back, piggyback, standing up, like dancing.
Yeah.
And first off, based. I love that shit. It's sick.
I feel like if you're not making a mess at the theater, it's fair game.
Oh, no, they're making
it's
a mess.
I'm talking like they buy the biggest bags, like the trash bags full of popcorn. As soon as that scene comes up, just whoosh over the whole theater.
I feel like
it's so bad.
If you're a 16 or 17 year old kid working at a movie theater, holy shit, what a dark era to be working at the theater. Like, you chose the wrong timeline to be working at the movie theater. There's some 33-year-old neckbeard who went to go see the Minecraft movie, and he's throwing popcorn.
No, it's all teenagers.
It's all teens.
It's all teens.
Okay, well.
It's teens doing what teens
do. And they're only there for that.
I do think that we should take a note, because I don't really love China's government that much, but we should take a note from them, because if a kid gets bad grades in China's high school, they have to go and pick garlic from a field for 4 months to, like, basically recoup their loss. I think that if you're a 16-year-old and you fucking throw popcorn in a movie theater and make some mess for someone else to clean up, you need to go pick garlic for a month and learn from your mistake.
Garlic at the least.
Garlic has to be hard to pick, too.
I was going to say a different word, but I don't think we should be picking that in America.
Noses?
No. You have to go pick other people's noses.
Yeah. The whole theater, you got to clear them out.
Pick my nose,
you
want
to pick your friends, and you can't pick your friend's nose, but now you have to go pick other people's noses.
Because you threw popcorn at the Minecraft movie.
All right, everybody ask my opinion of the Minecraft movie.
What do you think, Case?
It's pretty good. It's probably pretty good.
You saw it already?
No, I haven't seen it, but I know it's good.
How many squib loads out of 10 would you rate it?
Probably 11 out of 10.
11 out of 10 squib loads?
Yeah, I'm thinking Minecraft movie might be movie of the century.
Landon, how many squib loads out of 10?
I'm not giving it any, man. I don't like Jason Momoa's outfit. I don't like Jack Black.
He's gay.
I don't like having real life mixed with the animated. I think it's pretty lame. Who's gay?
Jason Momoa is like gay.
Character or in real life?
So he makes a joke that he's bilingual in the movie, but he says it like gay, and then he doesn't know any like other languages. He gets them all wrong, so what he meant to say was he's bisexual.
That's retarded.
It was like point, and it's a kids movie, so
they
kind of like snuck it in there. They were like, no matter what, we will get LGBT in this movie, and we're not gonna say it though. But another thing about it is, you know how there's like the names of items in the game, like
I'm very familiar,
like Water Bucket and Ender Pearl and all
I know all about
so
it.
So every time Jack Black uses the items in the movie, he announces them. He goes, Flint and Steel. He goes, Water Bucket. He goes, it's Ender Pearl. And then people like at the movie, Chicken Jockey's the big one. They trash the movie theater. But before that, like whenever he says Ender Pearl, there will be at least one teenager in the movie who will throw his full loaded coke.
Yeah. Oh,
that's a scream.
Just what a great role model, right? So Steve is this guy that is constantly on his feet. You know, he's working, he's building things, but he's somehow morbidly obese, and that's now our the children's new action hero is this fat Jack Black.
Yeah, they made an action figure that you can buy at like Walmart for your kid, and it's literally just Jack Black's body.
It's brilliant.
I just want to say, because you said Flint and Steel, I'm assuming that's a direct quote from the movie.
Yes. Yeah.
So I was at the grocery store and I saw this group of kids and they were yelling Flint and Steel. I assumed that they were special needs kids.
No, they were normal kids.
They're just watching Minecraft
special needs Instagram feeds.
That's how you get to the Nether.
Right.
That's right.
I was just trying to buy my fucking 99% beef.
You're probably worried about something then, hearing that.
I was just watching them, and I was like, these kids look like they're going to break something.
Every time I went to buy the Minecraft meal because I'm trying to get the toy, I've been in there, and there's like 50 teens in there, and I've gone with my girlfriend, and I'm like, I walk up to the table when I'm opening it, and I go, if I don't get the Grimace Egg, I'm going to freak out. And all the teens are like, oh, I want that Grimace Egg too. Yeah. And I go, me too. And like, we all just tarred out. It's awesome.
This is a great Because, like, while you're doing that, I'm probably, like, dry-firing in my basement or, like, listening to, like, black metal and just, like, sitting alone.
I'm living life.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're, like, out experiencing things. Yeah. I'm just, like, home alone. I don't even know what the fuck's going on.
Did you play Pokemon Go?
I played it, like, the day it came out.
Okay. So you just, like, avoid all things.
What are you talking about?
You, like, avoid all dumb things.
I don't know about that. It's not like I make some effort to avoid stuff. But I'm just not in the know.
Which is good.
I mean, I like what I like, and I have my own little world of stuff, but...
That's better than being contrarian and just being against something as it's popular. Which I am sometimes.
Yeah.
I think it's really okay to be either way as long as you have a good reason for it, yeah. You know, I think. But, like, there's, like, stuff like people hate on the Kardashians.
Yeah.
I really don't have anything bad to say about them. I know they're popular, but, like, I don't know shit, so...
I got something bad to say. They ruined Crumble cookies last week. They had the worst flavors ever. Right. It was like a Kardashian week. They just had all these random, like, mishmash of two or three different cookies into one.
Yeah.
But it was, like, the Kim, Snickerdoodle, Crumble, Sprinkle, whatever.
Fucking silicone.
So that's my only gripe.
I got something against them, too.
It's like, if you even have the Kardashians coming into your feed on a regular basis, it's like, I think you're the issue, right?
I got something against them, too. That fucking porn video was way too expensive.
Was it?
Yeah.
Porn video.
You weren't supposed to
pay for it.
What? Why not?
Well.
Kim was getting plowed.
Pirate Bay.
I know that it was, like, wasn't it, like, at night, like, there's, like, night vision?
No, it wasn't that bad, but it was really bad.
Okay.
It was, like, bad porn. It was amateur porn.
Okay.
My fave.
Your fave?
Yeah. I'm like, wow, it's, like, I'm really there.
So, I think that I really dislike those, like, Twitch streamer girls who, like, they're not porn stars, but they'll, like, wear very, not a lot of clothes.
Well, it's a light intro into their OnlyFans.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly my point, because I was, like... For a long time, I was like, man, I hate people who are doing that because, like, you're not helping. Like, you're basically, like, a weight on society where you're not doing anything. But then I thought, like, well, it's kind of not these girls' fault. It's the people who are giving them money you should be mad at.
Right.
Because they wouldn't be doing it if they wouldn't make money off of it.
But that's, like, soft launching porn to kids, too.
Right.
It is.
What happened? Right. What?
Hmm? What'd you...
What?
Hey.
And I'm anti-porn.
Are you really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I'm anti, but I'm not a partaker.
Yeah, I'm not a partaker. I'm not going to go try to stop somebody from... doing it or watching it, but and I'm also not going to try to scrub it from the internet because I think it is your First Amendment right to,
freedom of gooning.
So the one thing about Twitch streaming and stuff is like that they're so against like the fake gambling, like fake gambling in video games, and it like isn't it's like increasing gambling to kids, but since it's a video game they can do it, which is bad. But then whenever they just have like somebody soft launching
donates and she gets up and walks to write their name and just like bending over to grab the marker, bending over to write your name.
Yeah,
shaking shit. A little.
We all know what it is. I'm like, if you're smart enough, you won't watch it. But
well, I just think about like all like the 14 and 15 year old kids who like, because that's not technically porn. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing illegal about like a 14 year old kid in middle school from watching that.
Yeah,
but you still, I mean, that's not good.
Yeah. But then it's one Google away. But either way, you're gonna do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right,
kind of got a little off topic there. What other topics you got?
Well, okay, so this is not a personal issue with me, but I have a friend who's a snob about 124 versus 115 grain.
Okay.
What's the issue there? Because I don't personally notice a huge difference where I care, but he refuses to do any ammo splits or anything with me. Unless
Which one does he want?
He wants 124.
So he wants more?
He wants more. But I have not personally noticed a huge difference. I mean, I'm usually shooting Blazer 115. I shot the Federal 124 today. I was... fine, I shot well.
He's kind of like the opposite of normal guys, because normally they want lower so that it has less recoil.
So lower weight typically means less powder, therefore less recoil, more soft shooting. It's not a one-to-one, that's a generalization. The other argument I've heard is that 124 offers higher consistency.
Hmm.
It's more accurate at range, it gives tighter groups, it's just a more consistent round. My experience, having shot tens of thousands of 9mm rounds in my life, there is not a difference. I mean, I can't tell a difference to save my life. I've looked and I've tried to see.
Yeah.
That, I mean, at the distance at which I shoot 9mm, I can't tell you that there's a difference. Yeah. I think if you're shooting in a longer barrel, like a PCC out of like a 10 or 12 inch barrel, you might be able to find a difference at like distance. Like let's say 75 yards. I bet 124 shoots tighter groups.
And I could see like if it wasn't 9mm, it was like bigger calibers that were like the differences in powder and stuff. I could see it actually making a difference, but 9mm, 115 versus 124.
You have to, you just have to question, like, what are you using the round for? And then you got to get into the minutia of like, well, what's the manufacturer? How hot is this round loaded? Are you shooting ball ammo? Is it full metal jacket? Is it hollow points? Like, these are all play a factor in the weight of the bullet. Because 115 and 124, 9 grains apart. I mean, think about how little that difference that is in the weight of a round. Yeah. It's so tiny.
We'll we can do a little squib load callback. If you know the dog, the guy who's really good at shooting.
Yes.
Today, he told me he loads his own. We were talking to him about loading our own. And I asked him what grain he puts in his 9mm. He said 85.
Yeah, very lightweight. Mm. I mean, I carry in my 9mm carry ammo is 80 grain.
Yeah.
It's extremely lightweight. I have that so it has better expansion. Some people will argue that 124 grain, because it's a heavier round and has more drag as it hits soft tissue, expands better.
Yeah.
That has not been my experience. I've shot, admittedly, not like human flesh with it, but I've shot like meat and like fruit with it. And the expansion is fine on those 80 grain bullets. Liberty ammunition, it's good. So I don't know. 124 grain, like if that's what you want to shoot, more power to you. I'm telling you, as someone who shot a bunch of competitive stuff and shot indoor, and I've been shooting all my life, I can't tell a difference.
I can't believe you would call that guy who shot fruit. You had to test the round.
You saw the kind of nightclubs he was going to.
We saw the damage it did.
Yeah, it was, worked. Yeah.
Now, you did have a viewer that emailed a video of the, I guess, how would you describe that sight on the back?
It was a back plate. It was a replacement back plate for a Glock.
It's like a reflector.
Yeah, almost like the reflective material that like a runner would wear or a cyclist at night.
Yeah.
So that when the light hits it, it becomes a different color. And they were basically using that to assist them in finding their sights more quickly, or basically develop a natural point of aim as they aim their gun.
Yeah.
So like when this light turns green instead of like black, that's when your sights are lined up.
Yeah, supposedly.
So that's the theory. But what do you guys think about that?
I'm glad that in that video that we watched, he didn't even show it at all so we could know if it even works.
Like his target?
He didn't even give the perspective of it turning green whenever he pulls it up. He had it backwards, so we don't even know if it works. Yeah, it's a gimmick.
He just had it like shining back and forth. He never focused it on.
Yeah. Like he never drew it from the holster and let us see it like change colors in the light. And like, that doesn't work. It's a gimmick. Snake
I think if you salesman. I mean, I think it's dumb. I wouldn't want it, but I think if you're going to have it, I think I would have an issue like looking at the back of my slide to see it. Whereas, you know, if you train to see it peripherally, it could be good. But again, I think you're going to take too much attention away from on your sights, like getting your sights on.
Yeah. So I want to bring this up. At the distance at which self-defense shootings happen, it can be 2 feet away. Like someone is approaching you with a knife or whatever, and then they get too close and you shoot them.
Yeah.
It could be 7 yards at 21 feet like we sight on our pistols for.
Yeah.
And it could be 50 yards or 25 yards. And I think the moral of the story is that no self-defense shooting, no one is alike. They're all different. You got to prepare for the worst case and the most common case scenario. And I think that you do need to use your sights. The idea that like you won't have time to use your sights in a self-defense shooting, I don't think is true.
Yeah.
I think that there might be a shooting where you don't even use your sights because there's someone physically like touching you. Like they're attacking you and you draw your handgun with one hand because you don't have time, right? Yeah. In that case, it doesn't matter what backplate you have because you're not even aiming with your sights or your backplate, right? And if you have time to line up your pistol and see if that backplate is lit up or not, you've got time to use your sights. That's my opinion.
I also think it's foolish to assume that you can't use your sights because if you're practicing enough, you wouldn't even think about using them. You would just use them, right?
Yes.
Especially when that adrenaline hits. I mean, you're going to go into fight or flight. You should just naturally have that trained motion you to where you come up and your sight is right there.
Yes.
It shouldn't need to be like, I got to, jiggle this. And now, the nerves are going to get to you, but you should still have that motion trained in you.
Yes, I totally agree. Last thing I'll say about this is that this is completely dependent on there being a light source behind you.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, think about the scenario in which you might be involved in a self-defense shooting. Are you in a building? Is there a light directly above you or behind you? If no, then what use is this going to be, right?
Is it nighttime?
Is it nighttime? I mean, do you have a flashlight in your gun? Are you in a department store where there's not a bunch of bright lights overhead? I mean, there's so many scenarios in which this is completely negated, even if it were to be useful. So, I can't co-sign it.
I was going to say, I had an idea for a gimmick one. Yeah. So you guys let me know when you're ready.
Yeah, you want to finish
up? Well, I was going to say a quick note of that then. Would you say that it would be worth trying for a competition setting where you know there will be light? Or do you think it's too much of a distraction?
I've never used that.
I would say a red dot is basically the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, just tracking that red dot and having that be your point of aim is better than a reflective square on the back of your Glock.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say.
I would agree.
Yeah.
So my gimmick ideal is we have a holster where you can reach the trigger guard in the holster, and the holster's already pointed forward. It's already, you don't have to draw it.
Yeah.
All you gotta do is reach down and pull the trigger.
Like a shoulder holster kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's pointed this way?
Yeah, out of my waistband at all times. Oh, it's always pointed at whoever I'm talking to. Always hot, by the way.
Yeah.
And not only that, I'm gonna make my holster a little bit bigger so the slide can reciprocate in it in case I gotta pop off a couple extras.
It's very funny that you mention that, because there are some people who pocket carry, like in a jacket pocket with a revolver, purely so they can point their gun at people, and so the person they're pointing it at doesn't know that they have a gun pointed right at them. And they got six shots.
They're like, I read the brandishing laws, and I'm beating them with this one simple trick.
That is coat a weird pocket. That is a weird legal loophole.
Yeah.
We're not doing live call-ins today, but we do have someone on the live chat that's asking, Case, why do you say ideal instead of idea?
Because I'm stupid.
We have gotten several questions about this
topic. So a big thing about me is I do not care how I talk or what I say, and there's tons of people who try to correct it, and it never works.
Too late.
And I just, like, talk stupid. I don't know if I have, like, a speech impediment or something. I don't know. Yeah. But ideal is definitely a big one, and I don't think anything will change that one. Yeah. Washing machine, that's a big one.
I think we have a relaxed way we talk and then a locked in way.
Yeah, but also I go out of my way to pronounce words wrong and stuff because it's funnier.
Yeah.
So like whenever you practice doing that, I just talk dumb as hell. It's awesome. It's pretty good.
One other gimmick thing while we're slightly still on the topic, you've probably seen it. It's a prototype. It was at SHOT Show, I believe.
No.
I think was that recently? Was SHOT Show recently?
Yeah, but SHOT Show has them always.
Within the last few months, yeah.
Okay, so it was a gun, you insert the mag, and there's a screen on the back that tells you how many rounds are in the magazine. Did you guys see that?
I was thinking of that whenever I thought of the green thing, and they've done this with every gun, and it's literally probably because of the Halo video game that they keep doing it, and no one uses it, and everybody always thinks it's cool, and it gets clicks, but it's so dumb.
I don't think it's completely dumb, but it does make me question why.
Yeah,
because you can generally tell how many rounds you have left. Mm-hmm. I think that, in my opinion, a better solution to this problem would be a windowed magazine, or the windowed frame of a side of a handgun would be a much better solution. So I actually have a P-Mag over on the table over there that's windowed. The Gen 3 windowed P-Mag solved this problem.
Yeah,
you don't need an electronic screen, doesn't need any batteries or wires, less working parts, and you can see how many rounds are in the magazine, right? It has a little orange part of a spring and then a window in the side of the gun. You can see how many rounds are left. My problem with like a screen displaying how many rounds you have left is that, first of all, how much does it cost?
Yeah.
How much do you need it? And then how often does it break? How often does it need batteries? How many working parts are you introducing to this firearm that can now fail?
The ones on the Glock always look like a switch also, by the way.
They do look like a switch sometimes, which is not my issue with them. But I just wonder why.
Yeah,
the practicality doesn't make sense to me, because if you're thinking competition setting, you shouldn't be bouncing down to read your screen.
Yes.
Just from what I did today, I would count the targets. I go, okay, I know how many rounds my firearm has. I know that I can do this many targets before I need to reload. So that, to me, makes more sense than checking a screen.
Yes.
There's also another part of it. Like, so that screen's on. You have a Glock. It says that you have 17 rounds when you put the mag in. If I have a 100-round mag, and I put the 100-round mag in, it's still going to say 17, probably, isn't it?
I would think.
I bet it will.
It's one of those, like,
it's not counting the bullets.
It's another, like, just because you can doesn't mean you should, which is, like,
yeah.
You know, people want to stand out, and, you know, it's gun, you know, tons of different companies making guns, tons of people within those companies releasing interesting firearms. Somebody's got to try to stand out in some way.
Yeah.
I don't see anybody that's serious buying it, maybe just somebody with excess income.
I agree with that, and I also want to point out that you brought up something good there, and I brought this up during the episode we talked about SHOT Show.
Yeah.
I don't want to pick on people for trying to be innovative, like, and come up with new stuff, because I do think that there's a lot of ideas that in their infancy seemed stupid and not practical, but then as time went on became very practical and even the standard. Yeah. Like the first telescopic sights that went on rifles, people saw that and went, this is ridiculous. Yeah. Who would ever use this? Because the scopes back in like the 1890s and 1880s, they sucked. They weren't useful and it was really difficult and there wasn't a good mounting solution at the time. But then as time has gone on, if you don't have a scope on a long-range rifle, you're behind, right?
What do you think one of the best innovations we've had recently is?
I think that optics over the last 10 years have gotten smaller and better. Red dot sights in the year 2015 were available and they worked, but they sucked in comparison to the ones we have now. Like HoloSun was like a laughing stock.
Yeah.
It was seen as cheap Chinese garbage, and now they're the standard.
I think it's holsters.
That's a good one, too.
Holsters have definitely got better.
I agree.
Especially, like, level 2, level 3.
Yeah.
They're really good. You cannot, like, push the button on a level 3 holster and ever have it jam up you pulling the gun.
Yeah.
Which is very good. Yeah.
I also think that suppressors have gotten way, way better over the last, like, 20 years or so. That's, I would say, mostly due to, like, GWAT stuff and, like, special forces groups, like, really wanting suppressors. And then the civilian market has mirrored that.
I hate how the civilian market, though, is trying to build calibers around suppressors. Let's build a good gun first, then put a suppressor on it.
Yeah, well, I think it's both. I think you need a balance with everything. Like, for example, the 7.62x39R, the Russian AK round, for a while, that was the suppressed round because it was just the best all around. And then that became largely unavailable to the American civilian market, or less available, I should say.
Yeah.
And then 300 Black came out, and people thought, well, this is a lot like 7.62x39, but it's ballistically much better with a suppressor.
Yeah.
So what's that innovation breeds, or it's the opposite. It's just like necessity breeds innovation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But. And I think flashlights have definitely got better on like lights.
Yeah.
Because they used to just be duct taped to like guns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Biggest innovation, the Bodyguard 2.0.
Hey,
that's probably the biggest one in the last year.
That's a good answer. That's a really good handgun for 380.
Now, AI everything right now. Everything's AI. Can AI enter the gun space?
Yeah.
How would you think it could enter?
I think it could definitely help you improve your shooting. I definitely think it could improve knowledge about guns and stuff. I don't see it improving gun designs yet, but I think it could eventually.
To me, manufacturing is the biggest space. If you look at the history of firearms and firearms design, the limiting factor is almost always manufacturing. How cheaply can we make these parts and have them still work?
Yeah.
What material can we use that's lightweight but also durable? For example, plastic guns, like polymer-framed guns, have existed for a very long time. But they would overheat and malfunction and get misshapen and fail. And then sometime in the last like 40 years, 50 years, we figured out how to make them and they don't have overheating problems and they just work, right? I think AI will figure out how to make polymer ammunition that won't melt and won't overheat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could definitely improve 3D printing.
3D printing, and then I think the manufacturing of ammo AI will help a lot with. Like it will just figure stuff out that we kind of don't think of, I think.
Now how about, so that's really smart. I wasn't even thinking beyond the shooter themselves. Do you think there's anything that could happen, like a smart sight, or I can't even think of, you know, what this would apply to, but do you think there's anything like a civilian could carry that would utilize an AI of some type? That we're getting into like kind of just like real goofball spitball.
Sure. Here. No, but that's a good question. I mean, to me it's very difficult because any sort of self-defense scenario involving a civilian is so fluid and so difficult to predict that even with years of studying data and crime statistics, we still can't say what the quote-unquote average self-defense shooting is like, right?
Yeah.
We can say it's at this range or with this caliber or whatever, but that's still just an average and it's more or less a guess. So to answer your question, I think not in the near future.
Yeah.
I think it's just too fluid and too dependent on external factors that I don't think is going to happen. I think AI is going to influence manufacturing and design before that stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe if there's like a chip that you could give to new shooters whenever they show up to the shooting range.
Stop buying Canix.
So that they don't buy bad guns and they don't hold guns the way they do.
Yeah.
Yes.
That'd be the main. They could do that alone. AI would have increased the gun community.
Something that shocks you if you start getting near the 180.
Yeah.
Oh, shock collar. Yeah.
That should actually just be already implemented.
I'm glad you brought this up, Landon, because there is this new technology that's emerging, and people are trying to make it into law. But this thing called a smart gun. Have you guys ever heard of these things?
However, you can't pull the trigger unless you're the person who owns it or whatever.
That's interesting. Okay. No, I haven't heard of that. But it makes me think of this anime called Psycho Pass. The only people with guns are this police force. Mm-hmm. And the gun reads like the mental state of who it's pointed at. So if it's pointed at somebody in a low heartbeat, just totally normal, chilled out, it won't allow you to fire. But if it's pointed at somebody that's going crazy, then it lets you. Obviously, we won't get anything like that. Sure. That's what it made me think of.
It's actually that's very similar to. Yeah. So basically, this is a gun that has some sort of authentication system built in, and it will read your identifying factors, like your fingerprint, or like it will like read your face.
Yeah.
Really?
Biometrics. And it will say that, oh, you are the owner of this gun. I will allow you to pull the trigger. Mm. Similar to like a grip safety. So I hate this feature. I think it's horrible.
Yeah.
I also think that as someone who is vaguely familiar with cybersecurity, once your biometrics are compromised, like if someone has your fingerprint or has your face, that will never be secure for you now.
Yeah.
Because now it's out there, right? Yeah. And this is already beginning to happen with like big firms in the U.S. There'll be like someone who works in like an IT department. China will get this guy's fingerprints and they'll use his fingerprint to sign into that company's systems.
Yeah.
And now their entire system is compromised. So biometrics are not the most secure form of security.
Well, and then you have the 23andMe is going bankrupt and now they're being sold to the highest bidder. I imagine, you know, your biometrics are used to keep you from being able to buy a firearm. Say that they say it'd be like the red flag laws. You know, they find whatever the red flags were, what your internet history and things like that might be showing signs of somebody who could be potentially dangerous. What if they see something in your biological reading that says this guy could be more prone to snap and do something?
Search history.
Right.
Yeah, which is why I think that the Second Amendment is one of the best things that we have in the United States, because it is basically this like immovable object that says you can own guns, it's your natural right, and the government can't tell you what you can and can't own.
Yeah.
That's why it's so great that we have that. Because I can totally see on paper, like if you're not a gun person or you just don't know any better, where like a smart gun, the idea of that might sound like a good idea.
Yeah.
Because like, oh, if someone steals your gun, they can't use it to commit crime. But then also it could lock you out of your own gun when you most need it. It could also be used to prohibit you from using your own gun if the government somehow can influence that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
even if you had that on a 320, it would still go off by itself.
That is very true. Very true.
I had my biometrics. No, I don't know what happened.
How about this?
China stole it.
Quick hypothetical, not in real life. Let's say you're in GTA, you're carrying a weapon, and you're about to enter a business, be it a restaurant or something, and this says no guns. Are you walking in?
Every time.
In real life.
I'm hypothetically walking in every time.
I won't even be hypothetical. I'll straight up admit that if I see a restaurant with a no gun sign, I go, well, I'm the only guy in here with a gun, so it's my job to protect this place.
Looks I'm the big head honcho. I'm the manager now.
I literally have gone into restaurants, and I'm not ashamed to admit this because it's not illegal to do this.
Yeah.
I've gone into restaurants where they say no guns, and I'm like, well, how about I carry my gun with one in the chamber, loaded, with a spare mag?
I've never once turned around, except recently I went to our state capitol, and it said they had – I would have gone in, but they had scanners there and then a security lady, and you had to have a CCW to carry in there.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm just going to go take it back to the car because I'm not getting in trouble with the state.
Yeah.
The fact that they let you come in with a CCW, though, is pretty cool.
You can carry in certain areas with a CCW.
I should point out that state laws vary greatly, but for the most part, it's legal to carry anywhere if you have a license or if you live in a constitutional carry state. Yeah. Legal to carry anywhere except federal buildings or like government buildings. So like a state capitol, for example, like a state government building, that would be an area where it is legal to carry a gun, even if you have like a license or whatever in most areas. So,
well, it's also illegal to carry anywhere where my girlfriend's mad.
Yes, that is also true. Yeah. I should point out a weird one, and most states have this one too. You can't carry a gun anywhere that serves alcohol unless you have a CCW.
Yeah.
But this is so – I've seen it get thrown out in a few cases because if you go to like an Applebee's, they sell alcohol there, right?
Yeah. Chipotle. But that's,
Chipotle, yeah.
They some locations. Yeah.
Sell alcohol, right. But that's not a bar, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that if that were to get taken to court and you had a good lawyer – and you were getting charged like some gun crime or whatever, you could then be like, well, listen, they weren't there to get drunk.
Yeah.
They're there to get a burrito.
Yeah.
They weren't drinking. It was an establishment that they knew sell alcohol, so I think you'd be fine.
They'd check my receipt and see how many dollaritas I drank, and I'd get in trouble, though.
17. Good Lord.
Yeah. They cut them off?
Sean, you had said something earlier about most, you know, guns being polymer for a while. I know you wanted to get into full metal pistols because we had a differing view on the MMP2. What was it? The MMP?
Yeah.
M2.0, that's full metal.
Yeah. So,
you're not a fan.
Well, I think that if you want a gun that's fully metal, it just depends. My question is, what is it doing for the performance? Because I own an M&P 2.0 that's all polymer, and it's a great gun. It works.
Yeah.
And that metal gun, people might shoot and go, oh, it's flatter. It shoots better. It's because it's heavier.
Yeah.
It's shooting flatter and has less recoil because it's heavier. Does that make it a better gun? If you want to make your gun heavier, you can put weights and shit on it and make it heavier.
Yeah.
You put a flashlight, an extended magazine, more ammo. You can make your gun heavier and give it less recoil, but to me, that doesn't make it better. I think the argument might be to some people that it has better longevity, but it's maybe more reliable, but that's not been my experience at all. To me, the material that the gun is made out of, whether it's polymer or metal, does not affect its reliability at all. If it's a quality made gun with a good design and good materials, it should work whether it's metal or not. That's my opinion.
I know somebody who has a 365. They already own a 365 and they were like, I want to buy the
Legion.
Yeah, the Legion. And because it's all metal.
Yeah.
And I was like, why? And they're like, because it's all metal. And I'm like, so it's just heavier?
So just no reason to be honest.
It's just heavy.
Yeah. I haven't shot it, but that one at our range that's on, at the Smith & Wesson booth,
yeah.
I just think it feels really good in that. I think it's more the feel of it. I'm not really worried about, you know, the recoil and what, because I haven't shot it, so I don't know how it shoots.
Yeah.
But I like the way that it feels in the hand. The slide is real smooth on it. So
yeah.
Maybe if I shot it, I'd have a differing opinion, but I like the way it feels.
And I'm not in the business of telling other people, like, oh, you shouldn't get it because it's metal.
Yeah.
If you prefer the metal feel, good for you.
Yeah.
But to me, I'm like, what is this offering me that the polymer one doesn't have? And no one can really give me a good answer other than, like, oh, I prefer the feel.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's fine if you like it better. But to me, they're the same. The metal one's heavier, the polymer one's not, and that's it.
If I could shoot a gun that just weighed nothing but still shot just like every other gun,
yeah,
then everybody would want to buy it.
Right.
It'd be like crazy.
I should also point out, I'm probably biased here, because my first gun was a Glock 22 that was chambered in 40 Smith & Wesson, which is a notoriously light handgun with a notoriously snappy round.
Yeah.
So light handgun with a snappy recoiling round, I'm kind of used to it. So to me, a metal gun that doesn't kick as much, I'm like, so what? Because I've already kind of learned how to control recoil in like these kind of shitty lightweight guns. But that's just me.
I see it as a version of, you're going to buy a new video game coming out, and then there's the Legendary Edition, and they're like, now you get like a hat. You pay $20 more, you get a hat when the game starts. And it's like, oh, so you pay a little bit more money, and now you can say like, my gun's made of metal. Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always more. They always cost more.
Yeah.
They increase the price a lot just to have it all metal.
Yeah.
Mattel M16, what's the deal?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
What's the deal?
We got an email from a viewer who wanted to talk about this. This is something I can't remember if we've talked about on the podcast before, but there's a rumor that in the early days of the M16, and I mean 1965 to 1970, that era of M16, that the handguards and some of the furniture on the M16 rifle was made by the toy company Mattel.
Mm-hmm.
We had a viewer email us and said that if you take the handguard off of an M16A1 and A2, it says made by Mattel. I responded to the viewer and asked them if they could send me a picture, and they didn't get back to me quite yet. But I just want to point out that this is a rumor and it's not true. Mattel never made M16 rifles or M16 rifle parts. However, this rumor did come from somewhere, and I want to kind of get into the weeds of that. But, Case, have you heard this before?
No, but as soon as you told me it, I was like, it's the company who makes Barbie plastic. So it's probably because it was like the innovation of the M16, the AR-15, was that it was a plastic, like, polymer gun mixed with a not a normal wood furniture gun. So it was probably just people being like, oh, the Barbie gun?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably where it stemmed.
So let's start with the facts. And the fact is that Mattel never publicly, on record, made any rifle parts or rifles themselves. And this is verifiable. You can look at the government archives. You can make a Freedom of Information request, you can go and see what the Department of Defense ordered in this era, the 60s and 70s, for rifles. And you can see that Colt made damn near everything at this time for the M16 rifles. There was a few other companies, but it was almost entirely Colt and Armalite, which is Armalite was owned by Colt. So they're Colt rifles. Where does this rumor come from, though? And this is where we have less facts, but I have some sound theories, and I hope you guys agree. But number one theory, that before the M16 was widely issued, and this is about 1965, 1966, before it was widely issued to Army and Marines, Mattel made a toy gun that was very realistic and resembled the M16. And I want to say it was called the Dissipator?
Yeah.
Maybe something like that, but it looked like the M16. It functioned very similarly, but it was a toy, and it made like a fake gunshot sound, you know, when you pull the trigger. Mm. There is a rumor that in basic training, before the rifle was officially issued, Army soldiers and Marines were given this as like a dummy gun. Like, you can march with this, you can like put this on a sling, you can like pretend to clean it, things that they do in boot camp, right?
Yeah.
And it works for that. And then that gun, that fake toy gun, says made by Mattel on it. So then you could then say, if these guys are like 18-year-old draftees for the Vietnam War who have never seen a real gun before, they might think it's a real gun. They just, you know, didn't ever shoot it live fire at the range.
Yeah.
And then they go to the actual front and they're issued an M14. They never saw the real M16. They think that their toy gun that they were issued was a real rifle. Therefore, they think it's made by Mattel.
Yeah. They're like, G.I. Joe's making the gun that I use now?
Yep.
Yeah.
So that by that logic, then he can go on for the rest of his life to say, no, 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 Mattel made M16s. I was issued one in boot camp.
Yeah.
And nobody knows better, right?
And then it just continues down the fucking hill.
Yep.
Just that, shit rolls downhill.
That's
exactly I think Mattel missed out on the opportunity to seize a market and give us really cool, colorful guns like we're in a video game. And also Play-Doh Buckshot and...
Yeah.
Whatever else he could have made out of those.
Did they make Play-Doh? Mattel did make Play-Doh.
They either made it or bought it.
Yeah.
That's exact. Yeah. I think that would be cool.
They could have made some pink Barbie guns and stuff. Kind of like the Moo Moo Glock.
Yeah.
I really want, and this is a really, really stupid idea, but I want a gun that has the Nerf colors, like the Elite Strike color. So you have the white and the purple and the orange. I think it'd be so cool looking, but you could never have that sitting around anywhere.
They keep making guns that look like power tools, and I don't know who the market's for.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're like, this is a Milwaukee hole puncher. Well,
I'll tell you what it's for. It's for all of us that grew up playing like CSGO and stuff that are have gun skins. I want a skin on my... Yeah, I want a skin.
I don't know. The bear, like, original, what it looked like. Like, when it came out, seems to always be the coolest. You ever, like, got all the skins, and then you're still playing the game, so you take all your skins off and go back to the first one?
Well, I would unbox something and then sell the skins.
Yeah.
I wanted the money more than I wanted the looks.
Yeah. It's definitely just, like, something that was a joke or something, and it just continued on forever, and people think that toy company, which it's not that surprising because there's tons of industries in America that... Like, make your washer and dryer, and they also just make the machine gun that goes into A-10, you know?
Yamaha making, I'm assuming it's the same company, they make keyboards and then also four-wheelers.
Yeah.
Is it the same company?
They make motorcycles, yeah.
Yeah.
And they make pianos.
Yeah, keyboards.
And in case you were saying General Motors, they make like...
They make the A-10 and then, or it's General Electric.
General Electric. Yeah, yeah.
They make like almost all like appliances in your house, and then they also make... The giant machine gun that goes in your... There's tons of companies like that. Like, Honeywell is one of them that makes bombs.
Yeah.
They make AC that, like, goes in houses, and then they also make bombs.
Which that's is like interesting combination.
Yeah, like, where are you checking at work there?
The theory for the... Because I mentioned the toy gun thing, right? In case you just brought up the second theory.
Yeah.
Which is that... There was probably someone who was issued an M16, which is polymer, mostly.
Yeah.
And they traded it for their wooden and steel M14.
Yeah.
And then somebody at one point made a joke that, hey, these new plastic shitty guns are actually made by Mattel as a joke.
Yeah.
And then someone thought it, they took it literally and then passed it on literally. And then it became believed that, oh, actually these guns are made by Mattel. And that's why they're plastic and shitty. Because as we've talked about before, the M16 does not have the best... like the early M16 and M16A1s did not have the best reputation amongst American troops. But
Also, if Mattel was making guns, they might still be better than Kel-Tec.
I mean, Kel-Tec is basically a toy company.
Yeah.
That just makes guns.
They're just like, eh, you know what?
Last thing I want to say is that I feel like this might be what happened to our viewer, and I'm not picking on anybody because it happens to the best of us, but if you go on YouTube right now and look up Mattel M16, some of the first results you'll get are videos that were posted on April 1st. April Fool's videos of someone who custom built an AR-15 and then like 3D printed a Mattel logo on their gun purely to trick people and have a little funny joke about how, oh, I've got this ultra rare M16A1 from 1968. It's got the Mattel logo on it. You've been had. It's a joke. But, and yeah.
It's also a huge problem of people who know people who were at war and did stuff and then like whatever they say just because they were there. Like, keeps following on, like,
yeah.
we did this. And there's, I'll tell you for sure, certain, most, like, military stories are going to be pretty fake. Because I was in the military, and I meet tons of people who weren't even in the military, but act like they were, and they just tell stories. And, like, they usually regurgitate, like, stories that you've probably read online, and these people never lived the moment, and they just regurgitate the same story, but they're the main character.
I was thinking about that. I was thinking about what it'd be like to run a gun store, and I think it'd be a personal hell of just people telling you story after story after story, and you can't go anywhere because
you're the salesman.
You're behind the counter.
Yeah. Like, and like you'll be opinionated no matter what. So like, and all these people will be opinionated by who they talk to and stuff. So you can't sell them the right gun for the right thing.
Yeah.
It's just annoying.
Yeah.
The gun world. Don't believe everything you see online. Don't believe every story you heard in person.
Yeah.
And don't regurgitate stuff until you Google it.
Amen. Amen.
That's right. Well, there's one last, it's kind of an oddly specific one. If a shooter is kicked out of 109 ranges, is it the shooter or the ranges?
It's gotta be the ranges. Oh. He's too good.
The ranges.
Yeah, he's too good.
Well, to be fair, what if this shooter was promised a range 4,000 years ago by God?
Yeah. He was.
I think he should get the range, if it were me.
Personally. Also, here's a good Squiblo tip.
Yeah.
If you get kicked out of the range, that doesn't mean you're done.
No, you come back and you slowly take over and become the owners of the range.
That's why I carry 6 different fake mustaches in my vehicle at all time.
That's right.
What if, hypothetically, let's say you got kicked out of a range, but it was promised to you by God. So then you could maybe, like, I don't know, bomb the range, and then it's yours, right?
Right.
I think that's...
What if specifically you kind of always knew that this land belonged to you, but then, like, something big happened and you lost your homeland, but then that big thing was over and then they want to give you a new homeland?
Yeah.
And it just so happened to be the range, but then you go to the range and there's also other people who already live there, but now you have to live with them. Is it still your range, or how would you deal with that?
I don't know. I just feel like if there's already people there, you should wait your turn. Alternatively, you could kill them.
But what if you have like a big brother who has lots of money, and no matter what, you're keep your
Squiblo podcast, everybody. We'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.